Can women be astronauts? The answer is a tentative yes. Women can be astronauts. School teachers can be astronauts. Hell, a fucking chimpanzee can be an astronaut if you slap a helmet on him and strap him to a Mercury 2 rocket. I think asking can women be astronauts is the wrong question. What we really should be asking is, what type of astronauts do you want? If you are going to spend countless billions of dollars sending individuals on the perilous mission to explore space, do you want space monkeys, or do you want the best of the best of the best that our species has to offer? To give you an idea of exactly how selective the astronaut program is or should be, consider these numbers. 32 astronauts were assigned to fly in the Apollo manned lunar landing program. 24 of them left Earth's orbit and flew around the moon on 9 missions. 12 of these astronauts walked on the moon's surface. Apart from these 24 people who visited the moon, no human being has gone beyond low Earth orbit. For the sake of argument, let's just take the entire 32 Apollo astronauts, regardless of whether they actually visited the moon. In 1969, when Apollo 11 made its moon landing, the population of the United States was roughly 202.7 million people. Now, no doubt this is some fairly dirty napkin maths, but for the purpose of illustrating the point, assuming that these 32 individuals selected for the Apollo astronaut program were in fact the best of the best of the best candidates that America had for the job, then they represented the top 0.00016% of the population. To really illustrate the scope of what I am getting at here, on the left is a graph showing the distribution of running times for this year's London Marathon. These kind of differences in physical outcomes are fairly uncontroversial. After all, the female world record for the 400-meter dash is quite literally slower than the men's Olympic qualifying time for the same event. Even most radical feminists aren't stupid enough to demand mixed-gender athletic competition, and with good reason. On the right-hand side is the IQ distribution for the Raven's progressive matrices measured by Lynn and Irving. The red arrow seen on the IQ distribution graph is the cutoff point for entry into Mensa. Just in case you live under a rock and don't know, Mensa is essentially an exclusive club where membership represents the top 2% of the population in terms of intelligence quotient. Basically, it means you can score in the 98th percentile on any standardized IQ test. And based on that cutoff point, female members are already outnumbered 2-to-1 by men according to the official Mensa numbers. Now, when you think about it, Mensa membership really isn't even that impressive. 2% actually translates into 1/50th, meaning that statistically, 1 in every 50 people is Mensa material. Obviously, the astronaut program is quite a bit more exclusive than this. Assuming that you want your Apollo astronauts to be the best of the best of the best, as in 32 individuals out of 200 million best, as in top 0.00016% of the population best, selecting the absolute peak individuals that far up the population distribution in terms of physical fitness and intelligence means that those individuals are always going to be men. It is just a statistical fact. I made a brief allusion to this in my previous video, but this is a perfect example of how accusations of historical discrimination serve as a very effective cover story to distract from the innate female inability that has always existed. Feminists would have you believe that no woman has stepped foot on the moon because of the sexism that exists at NASA, but the actual real-world gender statistics at the pinnacle of mental and physical performance, you know, the pool of peak human excellence that you'd expect we should select our astronauts from, tells a completely different story. It's not sexism, it's just the numerical reality of the situation. Women are sufficiently rare enough at that end of the spectrum to be statistically considered non-existent. So what does that mean in terms of real practical outcomes? These days we hear news story after news story about strict performance standards being flushed right down the shitter to increase diversity, so as to let more women into professions which have such high entry-level requirements they otherwise wouldn't have a hope in hell of passing. like the 75th Ranger Regiment, which now conspicuously has gender-normed entry standards, wherein one gender only has to do half the amount of push-ups and gets a 3-minute extension on their 2-mile run. According to this expose in People magazine, inside sources claimed that the desired outcomes of the 75th were rigged by army leadership long before the mixed gender program even started, with an unnamed army general telling shocked subordinates at the Fort Benning Training Center, quote, "A woman will graduate Ranger School, at least one will get through." The source went on to say that this directive set the tone for what was to follow. Even though this was supposed to be just an assessment, everyone knew the results were planned in advance. Now, you think that's bad? Apparently, the bureaucrats running the New York Fire Department are so brazenly complacent when it comes to female affirmative action, they didn't even feel that it was necessary to skew their entry standards in advance. If you're female, you can just fail the test outright and still get the job as a fully fledged firefighter. Quote, "The FDNY, for the first time in its history, will allow someone who failed its crucial physical fitness test to join the bravest. Rebecca Wax, 33, is set to graduate Tuesday from the Fire Academy without passing the functional skills training test, a grueling obstacle course of job-related tasks performed in full gear with a limited air supply," an insider has revealed. End quote. Even within the relative comfort and safety of cushy corporate office jobs, the rules must be bent or broken for women to be even remotely competitive with men. During her tenure as CEO of Reddit, Ellen Powell literally banned salary negotiations within the company because apparently women aren't as good at negotiating as men are. Funny how that little fact conveniently gets forgotten whenever the focus of the conversation shifts from individual salary negotiations to the topic of why there are less female executives in the first place. Oh, well, that's obviously just sexism due to the grand patriarchal conspiracy of rich old white men to hold the poor hard-working women down, right? Nothing to do with the fact that the primary role of executives is corporate negotiation. Move along, nothing to see here. Yeah, in fact, I find it more than a little amusing that whenever I talk about gender and IQ, the comment section invariably gets flooded by cuck feminist apologists crying, "What about EQ? What about social intelligence? Women are better communicators." Okay, assuming that any of that is even remotely true, then why aren't women dominating executive roles where EQ and communication skills would presumably give them a competitive advantage? Apparently, scoring higher on an EQ test is like being the world champion at yo-yoing. Commendable, I guess, but ultimately fucking useless for anything in the real world, even roles where those factors should presumably matter. Now, soldiers, tech executives, and of course firemen are all important roles within our society, but as the famous Lynx Apollo deodorant commercial stated, nothing beats an astronaut. Ever. That is because even compared to elite army rangers, tech executives, and firemen, an astronaut is just about the most exclusive, high-profile profession on Earth, with the strictest entry-level standards you could possibly imagine. Again, I want to reiterate just how exclusive it is to be an astronaut, especially those of the Apollo program. Apart from these 24 people who visited the moon, no human being has ever gone beyond low Earth orbit. If you were selected to be one of these Apollo astronauts, then chances are you were selected because you were the best of the best of the best candidate for the job, the absolute pinnacle of human excellence required for a task of the utmost importance to the future scientific progress of our entire species. This ultimately brings us full circle to the initial question: can women be astronauts? Well, based on everything we know about innate biological gender differences, as well as the complete dumbing down of rigorous standards across other fields due to women's absolute inability to fairly compete with men on a level playing field, the answer is clearly and unequivocally no. No, they can't. Women cannot be astronauts. Not based on their demonstrable real-world abilities, not within a true meritocracy. The only reason that women have gotten into space at all is because we as a society have made massive fucking concessions for them. We have given them a free ride. We literally carried them there. Throughout our history, we carried women to new lands. We carried them into the modern age on the back of technology developed and built by men. I mean, fuck, even the hormonal birth control pill that carried women into their feminist sexual revolution was a male invention. And then, eventually, we carried them across the final frontier into space as well. Women are the proverbial space chimpanzees. We slapped a helmet on them, stuck them in a rocket, and blasted them into space. And all for what? Certainly not for the purpose of scientific exploration to advance our species. No. We did it because actual scientific progress, like the European Space Agency landing a spacecraft on the surface of a comet, is apparently less important to our civilization than making sure that the delicate sensibilities of women everywhere don't get offended by a novelty fucking bowling shirt. We systematically lower the standards and waste millions upon millions of dollars training objectively less qualified individuals, and in some cases, like ex-NASA astronaut Lisa Nowak, downright deranged, psychotic, murderous mental cases, all because the final frontier of space apparently requires greater representation of my vagina. Oh, won't somebody please think of the poor womens. If only they were given just a bit more of an institutional leg up, I'm sure the diversity snowball will eventually start rolling under its own momentum. Fuck that. It is time to honestly face the facts of reality. Coltane's just an angry misogynist. Well, you know what? Go fuck yourself. Pointing out the objective facts of reality is not misogyny. And frankly, I am not here to placate the fragile feelings of useless women. In fact, this isn't even about women, this is about men. It is time for men to wake the fuck up. We have been carrying women for far too long now, and even in the progressive future world of 2018, this utopian destination of gender equality where women will supposedly get off our fucking backs and start carrying their own weight is still just some distant, indistinguishable point over the horizon. This deference and appeasement, this demand by both feminists and traditionalists alike that we continue to carry women on our backs is quite literally detrimental to our peak progress as a species. And frankly, we can't afford to carry them any longer. And I am not just talking about this as an institutional problem within governments and large corporations. I'm talking about the fact that individual men need to start seriously reassessing their own behavior and the ways in which they are carrying these useless, lazy, parasite women in their own lives. Some years ago now, on Valentine's Day, I knew a guy who was boasting on Facebook that he'd just bought a dozen roses and was planning to walk around his city handing these flowers out to random girls on the street in the hopes of getting a date. The Facebook post garnered a great deal of praise from friends and acquaintances, congratulating him on his bravado, courage, chivalry, and romanticism. Personally, I was less than impressed. The maths, frankly, didn't sit right with me. At the jacked-up Valentine's Day price of $10 a head, a dozen roses will likely set you back $120. Now, in case my international viewers are unaware, prostitution is a completely legal profession here in Australia. Rather than taking his $120 straight down to the brothel and just getting laid on a sure thing, this guy spent his money on roses, gambling on the hopes that some random girl on the street might give him a phone number. As I recall, his little gamble didn't actually pay off at all, leaving him $120 in the hole with absolutely nothing to show for it. But consider that even if he had gotten a single girl's number out of that exercise, which he then parlayed into dinner and a movie, all at his expense obviously, multiplied by the standard 3-date minimum before getting laid, his financial investment at that point would be close to half a grand. Either way, it is prostitution. Men are still ultimately paying women for sex. The key difference is that the traditional romantic route costs a lot more, and without the clear transactional business agreement of payment for services rendered, a woman can freely renege on the man's romantic investment at any point she chooses. In other words, given the hypothetical what-if scenario where this guy's rose gambit had actually paid off and gotten him a few dates, he could have potentially outlaid an additional $360 on top of the money he'd already spent on roses and still ultimately walked away with nothing to show for it. It's just bad business, especially when you consider the number of women out there who quite literally boast that they only use poor chumps who want to date them as free meal tickets. And don't think this behavior stops at dating. A lot of people might be tempted to rationalize the situation away by saying, well, dating isn't serious and what's the cost of a few dinners? But it's ultimately this very same mindset that belies women who get married and then stay married just long enough for the husband to pay off the mortgage before filing for divorce and taking all of his shit. But without even getting sidetracked by the topic of divorce, even the cost of just those few dinner dates can quickly add up when it's spread across millions and millions of people. I mean, sure, by my estimation, this guy was a fucking idiot, but unfortunately, his idiocy is not particularly unique. When that kind of romantically desperate, simpering, cuck mangina idiocy is scaled up to the aggregate level of a civilization, we see with stark clarity exactly how much time and energy is being collectively wasted by desperate, thirsty men trying to make these useless, fickle femtards feel good about themselves in the hopes that they will spread their legs. According to this article from ABC News, the revenue from Valentine's Day spending in the United States last year was estimated by the National Retail Federation to top $18.2 billion. Let's put that into perspective. The Space Shuttle program has ended, and the proposed replacement program being developed by NASA is the impressive, if boringly named, Space Launch System, which is slated in the mid-2030s to ferry the first group of human beings across our solar system to land on the surface of Mars. Quote, during the joint Senate-NASA presentation in September 2011, it was stated that the SLS program had a projected development cost of $18 billion through 2017, with $10 billion for the SLS rocket, $6 billion for the Orion multi-purpose crew vehicle, and $2 billion for upgrades to the launch pad and other facilities at Kennedy Space Center, end quote. Did you get that? $18 billion. Last year's Valentine's Day spending in the US could have completely offset the projected 6-year development cost of NASA's Space Launch System project to replace their now defunct Space Shuttle program. That is exactly how much the collective stupidity of desperate, horny men trying to appease the fickle feelings of women is ultimately costing us. Not just in terms of raw money, but in terms of real, practical progress for our species. And as the price of this spacefaring technology continues to drop, that comparative loss in civilizational progress goes up accordingly as we continue to squander more and more of our resources on women and their feelings. Consider Elon Musk's SpaceX program. Quote, what really sets SpaceX apart and has made it a magnet for controversy are its prices. As advertised on the company's website, a Falcon 9 launch costs an average of $57 million, which works out to less than $2,500 per pound to orbit, end quote. Now, I can't help but think that Musk is possibly being a little too optimistic with his pricing here, but taking his SpaceX numbers at face value, for $57 million per Falcon 9 launch, the US could effectively expand their space program by over 300 launches a year. for the price that American men wasted on women, the International Space Station could effectively become a bustling metropolitan hub with scientists coming and going on an almost daily basis. No, I am not describing the plot to a science fiction film. We already have the technology. We could quite literally be doing this today if we had our priorities straight. And keep in mind, that $18 billion we're using as the basis for this comparison was just Valentine's Day. That is just what was wasted on women over a single Hallmark holiday last year. If we were to calculate the other 364 days a year, the collective loss in terms of civilizational progress would be many, many times more staggering. I am talking about engagement rings, a completely useless shiny trinket, sometimes worth more than the price of a new car that she wears around her finger as economic plumage for the sole purpose of signalling to other women exactly how much her matrimonial manservant is willing to squander on her. Lavish weddings, which apparently in Australia now come at an average cost of $65,000, all to celebrate a sham that will more than likely end in female-initiated divorce. $100 bouquets of flowers for anniversaries, birthdays, or just because. Yeah, $100 plant clippings that will be fucking dead within the week. Not to mention her own completely frivolous, ego-driven spending habits. According to this survey covered by Huffington Post, women over the age of 18 will, on average, own about 20 pairs of shoes. And of course, let's not forget the great civilizational money sink, the deficit business, the eternally welfare-dependent lady child that we call the stay-at-home mother, who hasn't offered a relevant service in decades, but continues to cost her husband literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in what essentially equates to marital welfare. Whether it is the token female astronauts themselves, or just the incalculable sums that desperate, thirsty men have collectively wasted in their own lives trying to pander to the fragile egos of useless everyday women, our societal appeasement, deference, and supplication to women and their fickle feelings is quite literally holding our species back from the stars. I want to finish this video by paraphrasing something that Barbarossa said many years ago in an old video, the name of which I can't quite recall. It's often said that if the Library of Alexandria hadn't been destroyed, we would have landed on the moon centuries ago. I don't know if that's true, but the collective loss to human progress because of our continued insistent need to carry women throughout history has been the metaphorical equivalent of torching the Library of Alexandria 1,000 times over.